day, everyone, and welcome back to the Not Safe for Work Photography Podcast. Today, we're interviewing Kat Malone. Kat is an experienced model who travels just about anywhere. She doesn't know how to wink and is looking for tips. How's it going, Kat?
Good. How are you?
It has been a pretty good day. So, how long have you been modeling?
I've been modeling since I was 18, for painters and figure drawers, that type of thing. But I didn't move to photography until I was about 22, 23. I've been doing it full-time ever since.
Is there a reason you didn't jump into photography immediately and started with the other types of modeling?
Well, I never really thought I would become a model. I don't know if people grow up thinking, oh, I'm going to become a model one day. So I really just started doing the figure drawing because I had turned 18 and I wanted to be rebellious against my parents. So,
I mean, isn't that most of what you do when you're 18?
I think so, yeah.
So what made you decide that you could do this full time when you turned 22?
I met a fellow model, her name's Willa Prescott. I met her because I was shooting with her boyfriend, who's a photographer. His name's Matt Smith. And I had a wonderful shoot and I got to meet her and she just it just seemed possible at that time. I just needed to see somebody, a living example. And I think later that week I created a Model Mayhem and a Model Society page and that was it.
I've seen Model Mayhem, I've seen Model Society, and I've seen One Model Place.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe the differences between them? Do you think a photographer and a model should maintain profiles on all of them or just pick one?
I have profiles on Model Mayhem, Model Society, and Purple Port. Maintain Model Society and Purple Port as well as I should be doing. Purple Port is more for Europe or UK photographers. So if I was touring over there, I would go back on my Purple Port page. Model Mayhem, pretty much everybody's on Model Mayhem. It's still really relevant. I book shoots on Model Mayhem all the time, especially through casting calls and stuff. So it's pretty helpful for me. And it lists all my booking info and I have all the references on there. So if somebody was a new photographer and they wanted to read more about me, they could.
So it sounds like that if you're recommending just doing one, you would definitely do Model Mayhem.
Yes.
Speaking on the subject of sites, actually, this came up in an interview I did yesterday where we were discussing there's no good booking sites for doing more adult work. I don't know how involved you are in that, but do you have any thoughts on, or have you ran into any sites that are good for booking more adult work?
I'm also on FetLife, and I've never booked anything on FetLife. I mostly use it to promote my OnlyFans page.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard a lot of models book shoots through FetLife, and that's more fetish erotic photographers. Most of the erotic shoots I book are either through Instagram or Model Mayhem. So those are definitely the biggest for me. Twitter, post erotic content, and not get in trouble. So.
Right. All right. But I'm sure we're going to discuss that in more detail down the road.
Yeah.
So, but let's stick to the plan. And let's go ahead and get the elephant in the room out of the way. You wear your hair in a close buzz cut. It's very distinctive. It is very unlike an awful lot of models. What made you decide on that?
I always wanted to shave my head. And when I was growing up, my mom told me no. And then the model I mentioned earlier, Willa Prescott, I used to tour with her for about 3 years when I first started. She has really long, beautiful hair. And at the time, so did I. And I asked her if I could shave my head. And she said, no, because we would look too different. We wouldn't be able to get bookings. Anyway, I went on vacation with my husband to Arizona. And we just said, fuck it, and shaved our heads together. I've had this hairstyle ever since then. I believe that was 5 years ago. And I get people who book me just because of my hair all the time. I don't think I could change it if I wanted to at this point because it's part of my brand.
Right. So much easier to take care of.
Yeah, it's a lot easier. I think it makes me feel more feminine too. Most people think it wouldn't make you feel feminine, but I don't know. It highlights all my feminine features. So.
Yeah, it does put a lot of focus on your face and a lot of focus. Mm-hmm. So the first thing people notice and brings up. It is definitely distinctive. I would agree with that. And I think that's something you want as a model for sure.
Yeah.
Some way to set yourself. All right. In a completely different line of questioning,
mm-hmm.
I've noticed that a lot of models will include fetish and erotic on their profile. If you do a search in Model Mayhem, you can check those boxes. It brings up a lot of models that have that on their profile. But then when you look over their portfolio, there's no evidence they've done any kind of that work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any insight on why that is? But just speaking, I noticed that yours is kind of similar. You mentioned erotic and fetish, but most of your portfolio is art nudes.
Yeah. Well, that number one is probably because I don't update my portfolio that often. And number two, I think a lot of fans will go on Model Mayhem and they learn to steal images off of the models' profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of models will only post censored work on their profile page or just leave out erotic content even though they shoot it, because other people will steal it and then post it on the internet. And that kind of takes away from their OnlyFans or Patreon or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely been one of the negative aspects of information wants to be free on the internet, because someone has to produce that and someone has to get paid somewhere along the line.
Yeah. I have a folder, a Dropbox folder of like sample erotic shots that I'll send a potential booking. If they're like, I get a lot of photographers who have never shot erotica before. They're really nervous about it. So I'll just like send them the Dropbox folder to be like, hey, it's just like a normal shoot, except a little bit sensual. You know?
Let's talk a little bit about setting rates. Okay. This is something that I've been asking everybody. I'm really curious about how everybody does it. When you look at how to determine your rate, do you base it on purely on the time spent where your value is the same, where the value of your time is the same? Do you base it on how much effort the shoot will take? You know, are you lounging around, not putting much effort into it? Or do you have to like, is it like a fitness shoot or something? Or is it a very mentally intensive shoot, or demand or scarcity? What goes into your determination on your rates?
Well, my rates that are listed like on my Model Mayhem, for instance, they're set at what is the industry standard right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of where I leave it. It's based by the hour and by the genre. So like if you were just shooting art nude or fashion or anything up to art nude, is a cheaper rate than if you wanted to shoot erotica. So, but they're all still by the hour. And then I have like a half day discounts. So it's like if you wanted to book a longer time, it's a flat rate or a full day discount. Most of the time it's just like conversation by conversation, because a lot of creatives have a different budget or they want to travel to a remote location and that takes up a lot of the time. So I'm pretty...
You mean you don't drive everywhere for free?
Yeah, I don't. But I'm pretty flexible with them. Like I'm not going to charge, you know, my regular rate to ride in the car.
It sounds like it's mostly based on time. And then there's modifiers for maybe, like you said, effort, you know, that extra time in the car. Or I imagine that the difference between fine art and erotica is the demand part or the scarcity part. There are fewer people willing to do erotica, therefore you can charge a little bit more for it.
Actually, I shoot mostly erotic.
All right.
It's just a higher rate because they're shooting intimate content and...
Mm-hmm.
Normally that content is worth more in the industry, like if they're putting it on their own personal fetish site or porn site or something like that, most of the time. But I'm not saying an art nude photographer can't make really great profit.
Right. Well, yeah, demand. So that's interesting. Do you work with a lot of photographers that have their own sites that are producing content for that?
It's probably about 50-50. Some of them are hobbyist photographers. Some are just shooting for their own personal porn collection. And the other half are probably professional photographers that do it as part of their income. So they have a site or something like that.
That's actually where this podcast came from. I've been shooting kind of amateur work forever. And I was like, I would love to do more adult work and I would love to sell it. And I was like, I don't know anything about this. And I was like, I bet a whole bunch of other people want to do this and don't know anything about it either. So that's kind of where this whole thing came from. So you may find me more interested in some of those types of questions.
That's okay. I'm happy to answer them.
All right. Well, so what is the most successful way you found to monetize your work? We talked about you set up a lot of shoots with photographers where you get a direct payment from the photographer. Mm-hmm. There are monthly sites like Patreon and OnlyFans. And then OnlyFans also offers direct payment options. And I'm sure there's other ways to monetize direct payments from fans. Mm-hmm. What's the most successful way for your work of those three? Monthly, direct payments from fans, or direct payments from photographers?
Monthly. Sorry, I'm going over the options again. Tell me one more time.
Sorry. Direct payments from photographers. So like shoots.
Yes.
Monthly, like Patreon or OnlyFans, where, you know, they subscribe and they hopefully stay subscribed. Or doing, I guess, custom work, direct payments from fans, where they ask for something specific.
Well, I guess my income comes directly in the order you just listed it. So I still make the majority of my money from one-on-one shoots with photographers or painters or, you know, sculptors or whatever kind of artist you are. And then I have OnlyFans page. Most of my income from OnlyFans comes from monthly subscriptions or like pay-per-view options. And then I just started offering customs. And because I'm so new at customs and I'm still learning like self-portraiture and creating my own video work, I don't charge as much as the normal model does. So that's probably like third down on the list of where my income comes from.
Do you structure the type of content you put in each of those places? Or is it different? Do you shoot basically the same type of content for all three? I mean, obviously customs can vary, but are you kind of open to the same type of work for all three of those? Or do you reserve specific types of work for, you know, fans or specific types of work for photographers?
Well, I run my OnlyFans like a blog. So I got the idea from a photographer, and her name was Francesca Woodman. She's passed now, but she was a famous photographer, I think, in the 70s or 80s. I don't remember. Just Google Francesca Woodman.
I am.
And, but she had a diary that she kept of her self-portraiture and her life and how she felt about society and her sensual desires and exploits and everything like that. So I wanted mine to run like a look into the muse's life. So I basically talk about everything on my OnlyFans. It has my diary, behind the scenes of shoots, some professional sets, like if it's from a trade shoot, self-portraiture, intimate videos, masturbation, girl-girl stuff. It's just all on there on a daily basis. So I just kind of talk to them. All my fans that subscribe, like they're my friends and they're interested in my development, like my life development.
Right. So it sounds like you're taking a slightly different tack than some people I've talked to, you know, prefer to keep more explicit stuff on their OnlyFans and they tend to do more art nude or more glamour stuff with photographers. Sounds like you're doing the same stuff no matter the venue, but you're exposing more of your life in OnlyFans.
Yeah. They're definitely like doing a lot more exclusive content, but I will shoot erotica with a photographer. Mm-hmm. But I guess on my OnlyFans, I do a lot more self-portraiture. So it's stuff that I personally shoot of me. Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I imagine it's hard to get a shoot every single day because people on OnlyFans want that. They want that direct line infusion.
And I normally don't do any trade work with other photographers. And I'm like very, like they paid me, so that's their work. I would never post that on OnlyFans unless they asked me to. Some photographers asked me to so they can market their own things.
Right. The discussion I had the other day where she, with the model I spoke to, she was talking about she only does trade when both of them have content sites that they're, you know, monetizing it in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always good. Most of the trade I do is with other models. That's just more profitable for me because people want to see me interact with other models. So there's a lot of lesbian content on my OnlyFans page. So that's what they want to see.
If the shoe fits, all that. Yep. All right. Where do you get most of your work? Do you get it from local photography groups? Do you get it off of social media?
Social media and Model Mayhem are the biggest places that I book content from. a lot of the time they'll find me on Instagram or Twitter and then message me through Model Mayhem. So it's hard for me to tell which one is the biggest.
Right. That's funny. I did the opposite. I found you on Model Mayhem and then I was like, oh, and an Instagram too. I'm a recent addition to Instagram, so I'm not up on the times.
Yeah. Well, Instagram isn't doing so great right now. So
yeah, I've seen, well, we'll talk about that a little more in a bit, but I've definitely noticed a lot of people complaining about it when I joined.
Mm-hmm.
One question, this is actually not even in line or anything, but it's a question that I've had for a long time around wardrobe. For example, I've seen, you know, interesting stuff. You know, you're out at the mall, you look in a store and you're like, oh man, that shirt would be really cool for a specific type of shoot. What do you think is a good strategy for photographers that want to build up a wardrobe like that? Is it buy everything in small? Is it buy it a little bit larger and you can, you know, tailor it down or use clips or something? Like, do you have any thoughts as a model on that? or would the answer be just, you know, hire the model first, figure out her size, and then go get that specific one?
I worked with both. Some photographers will hire, I forget what they're called. It's like a wardrobe stylist. Maybe it's a stylist, yeah.
Yeah.
And I talk to them and give them my measurements and they pick out clothes for the shoot. And then normally those clothes are returned. So you have to
keep
them in new condition and the tags are still on. And then the stylist returns those clothes.
Well, that's really interesting because I've had some specific shoot ideas with some specific wardrobe thoughts. And I'm like, oh, like, do I try and get it on sale? Because, and then, or do I wait until the model comes? I just pay whatever. I didn't think about returning it.
You can do that with like most wardrobe except lingerie. Like you kind of can't do that.
Yeah, we don't want to return those.
But I've also had photographers buy me wardrobe and then let me keep it. Or a lot of them will do thrift. They're really good at thrifting. So they have a lot of wardrobe because that's what they do all the time.
Right.
And then I guess the other ones are probably from... they have some type of deal with a smaller or larger company. So like a promo company, they shoot their wardrobe and that's what they post. And so they get sent new stuff on a regular basis.
You mentioned some of them will give you the wardrobe as well.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about wardrobe in lieu of pay? Or is it usually wardrobe in addition to pay? How does that typically work?
It's normally wardrobe in addition to pay. I've never personally agreed to do a wardrobe trade shoot, but that's probably because I'm not a big consumer. I don't really care about clothes.
Right. And it would probably have to be something pretty special. Yeah, it wouldn't be, you know.
Be nude or something. Yeah. I've heard a lot of models do trade works for higher-end lingerie, like Honey Burdette, or a trade shoot for like a certain dildo that costs a lot more. Than they can afford. And normally like those two things, the price of the item would be about what they would get paid for the shoot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I imagine that's something else you can't return either.
No. No.
All right. Let's finish up with one more kind of general question. What is your favorite shot from your portfolio?
Favorite shot. Wow. Like a specific portfolio or just in general?
Ooh. Well, I was thinking Model Mayhem because that's the one that's kind of publicly available to everybody and it's listed as a portfolio.
Okay.
Because I guess if you if you use your Instagram or your Twitter, that's huge. But yeah, if you have a specific favorite shot from there.
I will. Like I said, I haven't updated my Model Mayhem one.
So
I'll pull it up right now and tell you. Let's see.
While you're looking, I think my favorite from your Model Mayhem is the eye patch shot.
Oh yeah, that was fun. I still have that.
Like, it looks like a rhinestone eye patch. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Used a ring light up front to eliminate most of the shadows in your face. Again, just the distinctive hair. Yep, I like it.
I like the wine pour shot. It's black and white, and the wine's poured down my back.
I looked over your Twitter. I didn't see. I saw a wine pour down the front on the Twitter. I didn't see the wine pour down the back.
It's on Model Mayhem.
Oh, is it? All right, hold on, let me go back.
Shot that. I think the one on Twitter that you probably saw is actually Honey Pour. is the most recent one I did. Oh, and I did a wine pour too on Twitter. Yeah, I do that a lot.
Oh, all right. I see it. I didn't realize it was wine.
Yeah, it is wine. Mm-hmm. That was fun. And I like that he changed it to black and white and that you can't really tell what it is.
Yeah, it's an interesting pattern too as it goes down.
I think it like dried. It's like semi-drying on my back. Then.
All right. Well, let's move on and let's talk a little bit about touring. You've got a whole bunch of tours up on your page right now. But how much do you typically tour during the year?
Normally, I tour about 80 to 90% of the time.
Wow.
This year, I've been home a lot more because of the pandemic, of course. So I just started touring again. And I still haven't been doing it that much, like, as compared to normal.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm normally not home. But now I'm kind of used to being home, and I don't want to leave.
That's fair. That's fair.
But I head to DC tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's actually where I picked this up. I was looking for models that were coming into DC. So what made you decide to start touring? I know you talked a little bit about how you decided to go full time. Is that kind of the same time you decided to start touring as well?
Pretty much. When I started being like doing modeling professionally and full time, Willa asked me if I would do a tour with her. So we did a tour probably about once a month for 2 or 3 years, something like that. And then when we split up, I just started touring on my own.
What would you recommend for an experienced model? Like, what criteria would you recommend for them to determine when to start touring? Just when they want to go see the rest of the world, when they've, you know, kind of run out of local photographers to work with?
I guess both. Like, I still book local shoots, but I don't actively try and book local shoots. They just kind of message me, and then I put them for when I'm at home. So when I'm on tour, I have like 2 or 3 shoots a day, and when I'm at home, I have 2 or 3 shoots a week. So at home is like my off time. I mostly tour because that is the majority of my income. I mean, yes, there's many benefits. I get to meet a lot more creatives, and I get to do all these experiences that the majority of the population don't get to, and travel and see the world. But it's also like, that's my job. So I have to continue touring in order to make the income that I make.
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day. I never really thought about touring until I had to put together these questions. And I realized there's only so many photographers in a city. I imagined really difficult unless you're in like New York or, but then it's way more expensive to live anyway. So,
Yeah, I almost moved to LA because I was working there all the time. And then it hit me. I was like, why would I move to LA when I could just go there? Like it.
And get paid to go there.
Yeah.
So how do you decide where to go and how long to stay? Are you trying to book shoots before you go? Are you picking places that have worked well before and then booking the shoots afterwards?
It's a little bit of both. I normally pick where to go a month in advance or at least 2 weeks in advance. So like the DC area will book out really quickly once I post it. LA books out really quickly. But other than that, I kind of just pick places I want to go, like that I've had the best experiences at, or where there are photographers that I really enjoyed working with, and make that like a regular thing for me. Let's see if I can think of a place I didn't enjoy that much.
You don't have to talk poorly about any place.
Oh, it's not like, but I don't know, like places I didn't really have that much fun. I don't go back ever or often.
Right.
Yeah.
When you're traveling to these places, how do you keep your costs down so that you're not eating up all of your income and, you know, hotel rooms and eating out, etc.?
Mm-hmm. Well, you should plan, or you should know if you're touring often. Any tour, you're going to spend at least $1,000. But I make normally about $1,000, so it's kind of worth it. But again, like, I rent cars to go to shoots, or like if I fly somewhere, I'll rent a car. So you have to, it's like the rental car cost. And then if you booked places to stay, there's that cost. some models stay with host photographers, and that really cuts down on the cost, and they trade photo shoots for lodging. I stopped doing that because it took too much of my energy. I would rather just pay to stay somewhere.
Let's dive into that, because that takes too much of your energy. Is it just because dealing or sleeping in a strange place, or do they throw you on a couch instead of an actual bed, or?
No, most of them are pretty nice places. And if I really enjoy the host, I do go back and stay there. But a lot of the time when you're relying on a host photographer, the cost of lodging versus the amount of time they require is not equivalent. And they always want to hang out with you, which is fine. Like, I love company, but if I'm doing 3 shoots a day and I come back, I kind of just want to sleep and relax and not hang out with you and be your entertainment for the week.
Yeah. I don't know that I could do 3 shoots. I'm usually just mentally burned out by the end of the second hour.
Yeah. Yeah, so I try not to, but like I said, I've met a lot of really good friends through hosting opportunities, and I do go back and stay there and enjoy it. I guess it's just like the photographers they make me feel like I'm their entertainment, like I'm just there to entertain, and that's a lot of my energy.
Yeah, and especially I can imagine, at least among the hobbyist photographers, where this is kind of a fantasy for them. Where, you know, I'm shooting beautiful women, I'm a nude photographer. They're probably the worst on that scale.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for a model who has reached all the local photographers or has just decided she wants to go see a new city and wants to do her first tour? I know you mentioned that it's probably going to cost a minimum of $1,000 to go in terms of transportation and lodging. But do you have any tips that on what she should do or he should do to plan this?
I would make sure that you post it about a month ahead of time and kind of continually post it until your bookings are full on your social medias and whatever site that you're using, like FetLife or Model Mayhem or whatever you prefer. I would check all the casting calls and apply to them. I would go and browse through all the photographers or artists that are your friends and send them a personal message saying that you're coming through. A lot of models that I've talked to that are newer, they want to tour, but they're too nervous to tour by themselves. So in that case, I would try and do like a duo tour. I just did a duo tour with my friend Alicia Dawn. And so we split the cost of like a rental car and Airbnb and stuff. And then we each had our own shoots. So that's always a little bit safer if you're nervous about your first tour.
That makes sense and keeps your cost down as well. So helpful.
Yeah.
You mentioned a couple times that you're married. Do you have any advice for models with SOs that want a tour?
Do I have advice for married models that want a tour?
Yeah. Well, married or, you know, long-term boyfriend, and they want a tour, they want to see new places, and their husband or boyfriend or girlfriend might not be thrilled with it.
Huh. Well, my husband is spectacular and very supportive, so never cared. But ever since I got married, I'm just always very honest with him, so I'll talk to him about everything. He actually says I'm so honest with him that it's annoying and I've lost all my mystery.
As someone that's been married for 18 years, I can, at a certain point, there's no more mystery left.
I just ask him, it's like I think I'm going to be a full-time model. What do you think about that? And I'm going to start touring. How do you feel about that? And I'm going to start doing erotica. I'm going to start posing with girls, or I'm going to start dating other girls. It's just like a conversation every time. And every time we talk about it, and he always like is very supportive. So
that's awesome.
Know how to give advice for someone who doesn't have that. I'm just very lucky. I guess be honest. Yeah. So that's my advice.
Yeah, because you have to have that bad experience to get the good experience so that you can give advice, right? You've just had good experiences.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've dated plenty of people I wish I hadn't, but not as a model.
Yeah, we're not. This isn't a dating show, though. So,
All right.
All right, a couple more questions on locations, because again, this comes from my own desire. You see lots of people shooting in really cool locations. Where do photographers find those locations?
That is a great question. One that I have never asked any photographer. I just go where they tell me to.
No worries. I'm still working on trying to find some photographers to bring on, so I'm going to hound them about that one.
I heard there's a website, though. I forget what it's called. There's some website that people list, like, abandoned locations or something. A photographer would know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple on my list I need to reach out to next. I've interviewed a couple models, and I need to find some photographers. I want to find some cam girls. I want to find some people that work in videography. I need to get a good cross section here. All right, what type of locations do you prefer to shoot at?
I love being outdoors. That's probably why I love California so much, because it's just beautiful if you get out into the wilderness, like Joshua Tree or something like that. Studio shoots are always fun. I guess, like, I prefer the more, like, natural light shots, even if they're indoors. So that might be considered lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Not sure.
I mean, there's something magical about a big open window.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat that with flash.
Yeah, for sure. I don't really like being cold, though, so outdoors and pretty wet.
But you're coming to D.C. in December.
I know, and I agreed to do an outdoor shoot. It's going to be 40 degrees. I don't know why I did that. I'm just slapping myself in the face thinking.
It's going to be unpleasant. I mean, but, you know, the whole bundled up in a down parka and snow pants is just as sexy.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think it'll be okay. I'll bring hot chocolate. I have a military jumpsuit I can just zip on and off. It'll be fun. Maybe.
Right. That is an interesting point. And let's dive into that a little bit. You mentioned a military jumpsuit you can zip on and off. That makes it easy if somebody shows up. That makes it easy if you need to warm up. Do you have any other wardrobe tips for models that are shooting nude or erotica? I couldn't tell you the number of shots I've seen with, you know, bra lines still there and panty lines and belt lines.
Well, you're supposed to show up to the shoot with clothes that don't put any lines on your skin.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't normally wear undergarments. I don't wear undergarments normally. I think I might be a nudist. So it works.
You know, it was the natural state back in the day. I'm not going to argue with anyone.
I wear a lot of dresses with, like, sweaters over it if it's cold. Mm-hmm. And that's all I wear when I show up. Or if it's like a location, like an urban location where you have to be a little sneaky, I'll just wear a trench coat. Mm-hmm. And, like, walk around town with that.
I don't know. A trench coat seems pretty on the nose, though. Like, it's very stereotypical.
Yeah. The jumpsuit is actually my husband's flight suit that I started to wear around the house when it was cold. And it just is
nice.
All the way up. And it's loose. And I was like, I should bring this for shoots. So I normally wear that if I'm outside and it's cold. Like the one.
Yeah, because a fleece snuggie probably gets all snagged on things outside.
Yeah. And it's pretty warm, the jumpsuit. I'm sure you could find more at, like, vintage stores or something.
Yeah, that seems really interesting. What about if you're doing, like, a lingerie shoot or a set where you're supposed to be showing a progression? Again, this is coming from an amateur's perspective that's never done this, but I'd read somewhere that you actually shoot in reverse so that you start nude and then put the clothes back on so you don't get the lines.
Yeah, some photographers do that, and some just do it the regular way. I've done both. So I guess the advice I would give for that is, like, if you have a super strappy lingerie piece or a corset, you would do that last and the other lingerie first.
Right, because how tight it is going to generate the lines.
Yeah.
So if it's pretty loose, you can put it on and shoot as a regular striptease. Yeah. All right. We've covered all the touring questions. We can move on. And when I was doing some research for the podcast, I noticed on your Twitter feed, you had a couple posts on Instagram, and it sounds like you're not incredibly happy with them. What is going on there?
Instagram started creating a bunch of community guidelines when I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like FASTA. It's, I don't know what it stands for either, but it's the law against sex trafficking that Trump passed when he was in office. And well, I'm all against sex trafficking also. But what they...
Yeah, nobody's for it. Literally nobody's for it.
Yeah, no one's for that. But one of the first things they did is take down a lot of escort pages, like Backpage, a bunch of other ones I can't remember the name of right now. And all those people who had a safe place to book escorts, and escorts who had a safe place to do like screenings and talk to their clients and stuff, they all moved to other websites like Instagram and even Model Mayhem. I remember Backpage was first taken down. I had 3 shoots that week in the North Carolina area, and each one was horrible. Like, I showed up and they really wanted an escort, and we had to end the shoot early. And I was pretty unsafe because they did that.
Right.
And they just keep taking more things down. So on Instagram, they started to remove anything from like art nude to, and now they won't even let you show cleavage. I think that rule comes out December 20th. So
you would have thought they'd have learned from Tumblr. As soon as Tumblr banned porn, it kind of fell apart.
I mean, I don't think porn should just be on Instagram either, where everybody, including children, are just at. But I've never really posted porn on Instagram, but like safe for work pictures or something slightly sexual is fine. Like, I just kind of try and support, you know, sexual empowerment and, you know, feminine empowerment. So I don't think there's anything wrong with a woman wanting to take a sexy selfie. But I guess Instagram has a problem with that. So they started a new rule that you can't do any soliciting if it has a sexy intent or whatever, however they worded that. So I can't post anything, even if it's safe for work, that leads people to my OnlyFans anymore on Instagram. So I just had to remove all those links. And I'll have to go through again and remove even pictures of me in lingerie pretty soon once the new ruling comes out.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Did I answer your question or did I just go off in a rant?
I mean, it was a good rant, though. It's like I said, I just kind of got started on Instagram. I've only put up a couple pictures. I'm terrible at social media, so that's not really a surprise. But I hadn't really followed it, so Twitter the better social media site then for trying to get new fans and trying to connect with photographers? Or is there a better social media site you prefer?
Twitter has been really great connecting me to like the sex worker community and other models. And it works really well for marketing my OnlyFans. I haven't booked many shoots through Twitter, but I think that's just because a lot of the photographers are still using other platforms. They haven't moved over to Twitter yet.
I'm personally not a fan of Instagram, but it's not the content. There's a lot of great content on there. I'm not a huge fan of the endless scrolling, and it just encourages you to kind of glance at the content and move on. And it encourages photographers and models to just keep posting endless streams of new content.
Yeah, it does.
All right. What types of social media posts get attentions and drive subscribers to your, I guess, OnlyFans or whatever other subscription sites you're using?
Let me think of ones that have done well. Videos always work better than still images, I've found. So, like, I went home for Thanksgiving recently, and I was, the house is full of my family, so they moved my husband and me into my father's room, moved into a different room. Anyway, I had like the whole downstairs to myself. So I did some shooting when my family didn't know about it. My daddy's room and stuff. And I posted a little video. It's just like me posing and, in like panties or whatever. And I made a comment. I was like, just posing in my daddy's bed while home for Thanksgiving. You know, like, and that got attention.
Transgression, right? Crossing boundaries. Everybody loves that.
Other things, like, I get a lot of artists, like figure drawlers, on my OnlyFans who will buy custom sets for reference images. Hmm. So a lot of my figure drawing stuff will bring people to my OnlyFans.
I saw you recently made a post about posing for a figure drawing society. Is that a big community online?
That one was for, I think it's called the Figure Drawing Salon. It's based in Asheville, but it's a virtual, like a Zoom call that you can join. He does it weekly. And I don't remember, I think like 200 people joined that class. And he sets up like multiple cameras and angles. So, and then everybody shares their art at the end. It was a really good community, and it was a lot of fun posing for that group. There's another, the largest one I've worked for is called Crocus Cafe. They're based in Florida, but I think they do something every week also. And they have millions of followers on their website.
I was never good at figure drawing. I've tried it a couple times and I just haven't had the follow through.
I'm not that great at it either. I just know how to model it.
I have, in some ways, I think that is more artistic than photography. I know I'm not supposed to say that. I'm supposed to be, photography's the best. Photography's the, you know, but man, a lot of respect for that.
Yeah.
There is, and this is something that I asked the model in the last podcast, Christy Connor, and I'm going to ask you too. And I'm probably going to ask a couple other people because I think this is kind of at the root of being a successful model, whether it's photography, whether it's erotic, whether it's figure modeling. We talked before the podcast about the 1,000 true fans. The idea that if you can find somewhere in the world 1,000 people who are willing to pay you $100 a year, you can live a middle class to upper middle class life, depending on where in the US you live.
Mm-hmm.
I did some quick calculations. If you are trying to make a middle class, middle to upper middle class living by doing photography shoots, and you charge $100 an hour, that's 500 shoots a year. That is a lot of shoots.
Mm-hmm.
If you're charging $200 an hour, it's 250 shoots a year. But if you can charge people $10 a month, you only need 830 people,
mm-hmm.
which seems way more achievable than shooting at an hourly rate.
Mm-hmm.
Does that kind of jibe with what you've seen, or do you think it's the other way around?
Well, I'm a workaholic, so I will keep working, I guess, until somebody tells me to stop. But right now I still make more money from shoots than I do from like OnlyFans. And mm-hmm. I do a lot of work for OnlyFans and marketing and stuff. So sometimes it's hard to find those true fans.
Right.
But yes, I have friends who have made more than middle class income just off of their OnlyFans. That's my goal. I'm working on it.
Right.
I'd say right now with everything, just to give you a general idea, I probably make like $1,000 a year.
I'm gonna cut that out. Nobody needs to know that.
Nobody needs to know that. Is that?
That's none of their business.
I don't know.
No worries. No worries.
But. That's from like everything. So I guess, yes, it's true what you're saying, but it's harder to find the 800 fans that pay you $10 a month than you think.
Yeah, I've heard that there's a very large quantity of people on OnlyFans that subscribe for a month and then quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is.
Hmm. Have you devised any strategies on how to try and keep them coming? Wait, that's a bad pun. Let me rephrase.
Keep them coming.
keep them subscribing.
Well, I just like keep very active on it. I feel like if I drop an activity, a lot of people will turn their renew off, which means they're not subscribing for the next month.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps. I'm very interactive with them. Like, they message me all the time. I always respond to every message. I'm constantly putting out new stuff because it's my blog instead of like I only post this content and that's what you get all the time. I also offer people who leave a special offer to come back. That normally brings a lot of people back.
Right. I find it very interesting that people will spend, you know, $20 or $30 on a brand new bestseller. People spend $10 on a CD. People will spend almost $10 on a latte.
Yeah.
But they have a hard time supporting people. I blame the first 30 years of the internet. Everybody was in such a hurry to get everything out there, and nobody really thought about how to monetize it until the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah. I have noticed I've had to lower my subscription rate since I started OnlyFans. It was pretty high at first, and now, like, you start to realize that people think that's expensive to see everything you have to offer, which I think is very strange.
Yeah.
So I lowered it, but now I have a lot more fans, so I guess it worked out in my favor. So.
Have you done the math to determine if it was worth it? Like, are you making, and again, we don't want to talk specific numbers, but are you making more money now with the lower rate and the more fans versus fewer fans and a higher rate?
I have. I'm making more from lowering it, and I get a lot more fans, like new fans, on a daily basis. Because it's at a lower price, it just means that they're going to pick to sign up for me versus some other model that is at a higher price.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it has been beneficial, but I mean, if all of the people that were with me today had signed up at the original higher price, yes, I would be making a lot more money.
Yeah. So, all right. So a subset of this 1,000 true fans question is that if you could find 100 true fans that were willing to spend $1,000 a year on you, you could have the kind of the same level of living. Are you doing anything to try and find those 100 true fans, to try and find the people that, you know, they don't want to just hire any model. They don't want to just, you know, interact with any model. They are looking for you specifically. What kind of strategies are you doing to try and find and try and keep them, you know, interacting with you?
I guess those are what people I would consider like my favorites, not just because they give me a lot of money, but because they're all investing like a lot of time with me. Those are like from photographers who, like, I have a few photographers who will prepay that amount, and then I just continually shoot with them, and then they prepay the amount again.
Right.
They're investing more in, like, yes, and like the photography and what they get to see or whatnot, but they also, I think, are more interested in your life. They actually care about you doing financially well. They want to hear, you know, that you saved your new savings goal, or you finally bought property that you really wanted, or a new car because yours broke down or something like that. And so you just like keep, they're your friends at that point.
All right. Well, we are running long on time. We're gonna skip over and talk briefly about working with new photographers, and we're gonna shut this down.
Okay.
So, new photographers, what advice would you give a photographer who has been thinking about shooting nude or fetish for the first time, and they are just scared?
I always tell them what an erotic photo shoot is like. Like, a lot of the times they have this perception that the model is just going to like masturbate in front of them, and then that would make them feel awkward, and or they're going to like try and hit them up for escort services and they don't want that type of thing. In reality, I'm still posing just like it with an art nude shoot or a fashion shoot. I'm just doing different poses with my finger on my labia or something. I still wait for the shot to be taken before I move to a new pose. And once you explain that and they see sample shots of what erotic I've shot before, they're a lot more comfortable, and the shoots normally go really well. But I get a lot of photographers who are like, I've never done this before, but I think I want to shoot it with you, type of thing.
Right. Any recommendations on how they approach you? Their initial email or message on Model Mayhem?
Like, how to ask me that respectfully?
Yeah. Again, like I mentioned before, your profile on Model Mayhem doesn't have a lot of erotica. Like, let's say they see it, they want to shoot with you. You're, you know, traveling to their location. They want to work with a professional model. How do they phrase it? Do they come out? I mean, well, obviously they should do it respectfully, but.
A lot of them just are very honest. Like, if they're new, they're pretty honest. They just ask, like, I'm new to erotica. What is that shoot? What is an erotic shoot like? Or what are your limits? And I have a paragraph that I send people of, you know, what I'm comfortable with when I shoot erotica.
That's interesting. That makes sense. I've definitely thought about the limit. It's funny you mentioned the limits thing, because that's what I was thinking at least once or twice when I was thinking about messaging a model. I was like, but that comes across as kind of, I want to push your limits. And that's not necessarily true.
No, I don't think so.
All right. That's good to have that other perspective on that then. Are there any absolute no-nos on what they should message you?
No.
And we're talking photographers here, not people that want escorts. That's a no-no.
Right. Well, a lot of photographers, unfortunately, also want an escort.
Oh, they want both.
You should never message a model on her professional platform asking for escort services, because that's illegal. Mm. And even if you offer that, it could get them into trouble. So
yeah, I'm sure that they save all of that for potential legal issues down the road.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily. Not, I mean, they might not necessarily be looking for that, but, you know, if a model gets hurt and, you know, sues Model Mayhem because they met the photographer there, you know, someone gets robbed or something like that, I'm sure they save all of that for legal.
I guess so. I mean. Mm-hmm.
All right. Where should these new photographers be shooting? Do you think new photographers should be renting a studio if they have one locally? Do you recommend for a new photographer or model working with a new photographer that they shoot a non-nude or non-erotic somewhere public first?
Well, right now with the pandemic, a lot of models are only doing outdoor shoots.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're new, I would either rent a studio or have a home studio or a private, you know, safe location, indoor or outdoor. A lot of models are uncomfortable going to like public parks, even if it's a vast public park and no one is around. That's not always the best option. So if you rent a private place and you can assure the model that nothing will happen, then it's probably the best option.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it makes sense where a new photographer is already nervous and then you put them in a public place where they are worried about being caught. And yeah, it sounds like anxiety upon anxiety. All right. One last question before we finish this thing off. What about new photographers who are concerned about being duplicative? You know, they're trying to find something new. They're trying to find something different. Do you have any advice for those photographers?
Like a new concept or
something? Well, you know, yeah, it's hard. Honestly, as a photographer, sometimes it's hard to try and come up with new concepts. It's a lot of it's been done when you're looking for inspiration. A lot of times the inspiration just makes you want to go and kind of shoot in the same way as what you just saw that inspired you.
Mm-hmm.
What's a model's perspective on being asked to do the same shoot you've been asked to do 10 times?
Well, it doesn't bother me at all because that's my job and everybody shoots it differently. So each of those 10 shoots is going to look completely different. In my mind, but if you were looking to do new concepts or something more original, I would start creating a mood board. So that I love receiving mood boards and I hate being asked, oh, what do you want to shoot? Do you have ideas?
Right. I feel like that comes from that place where the photographer is like, oh, I've got these things I want to shoot, but they're derivative. They're, you know, there's stuff that's been done before. And they don't want to just come out with it and say, you know, I would like to do a, you know, body landscape shot, even though it's been done.
Yeah, but body landscape shots are pretty.
Yeah. What you mentioned a mood board. Is that just a collection of photographs all kind of put together in a single layout? Is there a software tool or a website that does that?
You can create mood boards on things like Pinterest, or you could just... like, it's basically just collecting photos that inspire you in some way. Not that you're going to copy the photo that you saw. You just keep it so that you mm-hmm. know where the inspiration came from. And, like, so you can share those ideas with the model. And you could do it through Pinterest, or you could just collect screenshots as you're scrolling through Instagram and then put those screenshots in a Dropbox folder. Share that with a model. Like, oh, I think your look would fit this mood board. What do you think? Which are your favorite inspo shots?
Right. All right. Well, looks like we've reached the end of our time. This was super interesting, and frankly, we kind of went a few minutes over, and I apologize for that. But we're going to ask one last question that I've been asking everybody. What is the most important thing that you think new models should do or know? If you had to take everything you know about modeling and just pick one thing that they should get right from the start if they can.
One thing. Wow, so much pressure. One thing. I guess I would go with safety, and a lot of people don't want to share their location, even with loved ones, because they think that that's weird. I share my location with my husband, my mom, my best friend. In case anything happens to me, they know where my phone last was.
That makes sense. Yep. Your safety is paramount.
Yeah.
All right. So, Kat, where can everyone find you online if they want to connect with you after they hear this podcast?
Well, I would love people connected with me. I'm One Kat Malone. You spell it out, OneKatMalone. I'm One Kat Malone everywhere. So Instagram, Twitter, and OnlyFans.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And with that, we are done. Check us out at the nsfwphotographypodcast.com and subscribe at your favorite podcast dispenser. Have a lovely week, everyone.